Today's episode of the Sidious Mag Podcast is brought to you by Morton. I think some of you have heard of the new drink that's making waves in the running industry. Morton is the world's most carbohydrate-rich sports drink, and it's being used by some of the top marathoners in the world. Eliud Kipchoge used it in Breaking 2 and in the Berlin Marathon, where he just won. Wilson Kipsang used it in Tokyo, and I'm sure he's going to be using it again in New York City. Galen Rupp just used it when he was winning in Chicago. Every major marathon winner since September 2016 has been drinking Morton while on the go. Personally, I've been testing it and using it since May, and I think it played a major role in my big personal best that I ran at the Berlin Marathon, and I'm going to be using it again in the New York City Marathon in just a couple days. There's two types of drink mixes, one that serves 80 grams of carbs and another that contains 40 grams, so you can mix and match what works best for you. They're aimed to get you that energy boost for when the going gets tough during the race. And our listeners can try it now. It's on sale in the EU and it just got to the US. All you have to do is visit Morton.com. That's M-A-U-R-T-E-N.com. And if it works for Eliud Kipchoge and it works for me, I think you should see for yourself. Visit Morton.com today. My guest for today's show is someone I've been looking forward to interviewing for a while now. That's Derek Murphy, famous for MarathonInvestigation.com. It's a site where he cracks down on marathon cheats and any red flags that come up from major races. No race is too big or too small for him to have his watchful eye on. And he does it all from the comfort of his own home in Ohio. So we decided to give him a call and talk to him for a bit. So let's start the show.
So, Derek, a lot of people want to know, what is your background, I guess, before we get to discussing how you got started doing this? What was your background in running beforehand?
I've run 10 marathons and, you know, a few other races, did a couple 24-hour races, all of them very slow. I was never, you know, Boston qualifier-type runner. I've never broken 5 hours in the marathon. My half marathon best was just a little bit over 2 hours, which was the first half of one of those marathons. So obviously I paced myself a little bit too fast before I cramped up. Never fast. Just kind of started running, in my, early 30s, just to kind of try to get in shape. And then it's kind of, tailed off a little bit. I don't race nearly as much. I run when I can. But I haven't raced for a number of years.
So is it because, I guess, you were at that level that there is a little bit of respect, I guess, for those who do qualify for Boston outright? And then is that kind of like the path to how you got to tracking down these cheats?
Yeah, a little bit. I can definitely, you know, having run a number of marathons, I knew how much work it took just to be able, you know, for me to complete one. And then, you know, seeing people who, you know, worked the tail off to, you know, to qualify for Boston. You know, so I was kind of intrigued by the stories you could hear of people cheating, you know, to get into Boston. Kip Litton was the first one that I knew about, and he was one that, you know, supposedly cheated at a number of races to run under 3 hours. Was his thing, to run under 3 hours in 50 states, and a lot of his results were questionable. Really, all of them were. So I was kind of following that as it kind of got some headwind on the message board. So that was kind of the first I really thought about somebody, you know, cheating at a marathon, with people like me running.
Then how is it that you learned about, I guess, the practices of how they were tracking down Kip Litton, and then from there coming up with your own ways to find out who's doing this right and who's doing it wrong?
I kind of found out I was following that on the, you know, Let's Run message boards as it was happening, kind of towards the tail end of when I, you know, started reading about it. And then, you know, the article was an article about him in New Yorker. It was a while, it was 3 years after that before I started, you know, the site and started, you know, looking at runners. But, and that kind of was an offshoot from Mike Rossi. He was the runner who took his kids out of school, wrote a letter to the principal, and that kind of went viral, you know, kind of in a positive way towards him. But then it was determined that he, you know, cut the course in his qualifier. So then I started thinking, all this, you know, attention being brought on these two people, you know, is this does this happen a lot, or are we just hearing about, the rare case where it does happen? So that's when I started just kind of, poking through results of, random races and pretty much every race I would look at where the splits were available to me, I would see an instance of somebody that apparently cut the course as I dig in deeper, I would find, see where people had someone else run with their bib and they used that time to qualify for Boston and whatnot. So that's when I started getting a little more, method to my madness, so to speak, where I thought, okay, these people are cheating at these races, but how many people actually cheat and use those entries to run Boston? Because that's what, that's kind of what really mattered. If someone's cheating to enter Boston, that's taking a spot away from someone else, since Boston's always oversold and everybody who runs a qualifying time that tries to enter doesn't get in the race. So but that's where I kind of focus more, just, from a time standpoint. And, again, that's where it's not really so much a victimless crime.
So how much time are you dedicating to doing this, and how long does it really take to crack down on a case? And I'm sure it varies from person to person, how in depth you go behind. But I guess, what's the process like to know you're 100% sure that, someone was very likely cheating?
Yeah, if I'm looking at a particular race's results and then just kind of, getting through there, usually, from the time I, look at somebody who's, okay, these splits are suspicious, with missing splits and, widely varying times, and there's a whole lot of different things I look at. People may miss a split. It could be a technical issue, so that's not enough by itself to say, okay, they cut the course. But, looking at photos and, calculating paces and whatnot. So once I kind of hone in on somebody, then I'll look at their history, really within. I have a good gut feeling, very quickly. But then to prove it out to the point where I'd be prepared to send information off to a race director or write an article, really within 30 minutes of time, I'm pretty much to that point. But then it's just gathering all that kind of extra detail that, really would, convince, somebody else or my readers that it was, person definitely cheated. And then it could go back to looking at historical results. Okay, hey, it looks like they did this in more races than one. So then at that point, that's where it gets into hours, if I'm, end up looking at multiple races where somebody's a serial cheater.
You're not losing sleep over this, though, right?
No. It's the time. It really kind of comes and goes. There's sometimes I really get stuck in on something that's, particularly interesting or grabs me. And then, there's times where it's, not spending much time on it at all.
So I'll sprinkle in a couple questions that we got sent in on Twitter throughout the conversation. So someone actually wanted to know, what's the most elaborate cheating experience that you've experienced or come across? I guess the two biggest, have been, Kip Litton and Mike Rossi are these two that have really blown up, at least on message boards like Let's Run.
Right.
You went viral, for I think it was Jane SEO or someone like that. So I guess what was the most complex or one that you had to really dig deep into, past results and stuff?
Yeah, probably the most really one that I think is really on the same level is like Kip Litton, and that was the Donnellys. And I've written about them, and they've been written about in other publications since then, where it was a husband and wife, and the husband, initially he's the one that came to my attention for, cutting a course and a qualifier. Then looking back, I found a previous Boston Marathon where his wife was wearing a copied bib. She didn't have a qualifying time, but she was in pictures with him. And then it was just probably maybe a dozen races. He's probably been disqualified from half a dozen. Other ones were questionable. And then once it kind of became public, that he was doing this, I'd hear from race directors that he ran in the race under an alias. And so it was like, he's just trying to keep a step above, trying to do anything to, run these races. And it was, it went from, even copying bibs to cutting courses to running as aliases, just the variety. Usually I find a cheater, it's pretty much the same method every time. But this guy was, doing pretty much anything he could to run Boston. And actually, for the 2017 Boston Marathon, he initially had a bib, but we were able to get him disqualified and get that bib, taken away before he ran it. So from an individual, that's, probably the most, just, keep going in different methods and stuff. And but really the most complex was, I wrote about a couple articles about the travel agency in France that was, 1 year they had a race director add runners to results so that they could sell bibs to these runners for Boston Travel Plan. So there are runners that weren't even on the course that were getting finish times. And I was able to discover a number of those runners based on kind of an algorithm to look for people who ran Boston, who most, you know, who possibly cheated. So a bunch of runners with low bib numbers had real slow times, and they all qualified as the same, the Mont Saint-Michel marathon in France. So you know, I was able to piece that together, and then it came out that it was through this travel agency. And then last year, same travel agent, they used bib mules. They used other people to carry bibs across, registered to runners so that they could enter Boston. Again, we caught that before they were able to actually run Boston, but it's just, you know, the extremes that, you know, people go through either for money or just to, you know, say they ran Boston. You know, I've seen it all.
You kind of have mentioned it a couple times, but what's your process, I guess, of, you know, coming across your conclusion that someone cheated, and then from there, does it go to the race director? Do you reach out to the person first to kind of get an explanation for maybe what happened? Who do you go to from there?
Yeah, typically I'll start with the race director. If I come across somebody, hey, I think this person, you know, cheated, I'll reach out to the race director and say, just, can you take a look at this result? And sometimes, you know, a lot of times they'll have more information than me. There's times where, we had a timing issue or whatever. So I'll go to the race director and just, you know, I'll say, hey, this person cheated, please disqualify them. I ask, hey, can you just, do you have any more information on this? And let me know. Sometimes, 100% certain that the person cheated. Other times it's kind of, okay, hey, slips don't look right. Were there any kind of issues that I may not be seeing? So I'll reach out to the person. Anytime I write an article about somebody specifically, I'll reach out to that person and do the best I can and get a hold of them. A lot of times it's hard to locate their information or they're just not responsive. So that could go a lot of different ways. But yeah, if I'm going to write about, you know, an individual in particular, I'll try to contact them first for an article like I wrote about Mexico City where there were 5,000 people that cut the course. You know, I didn't call anybody out specifically. I'm not, you know, obviously I can't reach out to 5,000 people. So the general articles, I won't necessarily reach out to, you know, each individual, but if I'm writing about one individual or two individuals, I do everything I can to contact them and, get their side, get their, you know, get anything they want to share, you know, before I write the article.
Do you find it hard sometimes to, you know, I guess like, come set your own ethics as to who you name and who you don't?
That's real hard. And I kind of turned on a little bit after that, the Jane Seau case. I didn't name her in my original article, but that just got picked up by everybody. And, you know, she got named. They said what school she went to, where she worked and all that stuff. So even though I didn't name her, you know, it went out there. So that kind of, you know, so I saw, you know, what, you know, how far it could go. In that case, even though I didn't name her, pretty much since then I've been, I very rarely name somebody an article at this point. And even in most cases, I'll obscure bibs and make it so somebody, you know, wouldn't mm-hmm. be able to identify the runner at this point, unless it's something particularly egregious. In most cases, you know, it's my recent articles, I'll even cover up bibs. And, you know, some people have been complaining about that. You know, hey, how come you're not naming them? It's the other way. When I do name someone or a bib is, you know, they're identifiable from their time or, you know, their bib, then I'll, you know, hear about it that way too.
I'm sure you're familiar with the TV show Cheaters, and there, you know, there's now the MTV variation of, I guess, of Catfish, where people pose as others on the internet. I guess, like, it's given me the idea. It'd be a very interesting show to have, I guess, you do, you know, this research, and then this camera show up and confront someone. I guess, like, what have you come across, any sort of face-to-face meeting with anyone that you've reported on before?
No, not face-to-face. And again, maybe if I raced more, maybe I would. but there's some. There's a woman and her husband I wrote an article on that they were featured. I was on the Today Show back early this year. And the woman there, I'm a regular contact with her. Again, she's one, and she, you know, fully admitted to having her husband wear her bib, you know, to get a better time. You know, she never used, you know, any of those times to run Boston, even though her last time would have qualified her to run Boston, so I can't say for certain that she wouldn't have. But again, she was very remorseful, and she, you know, owned up to it. She even, you know, wrote some excerpts, you know, for the article, kind of explaining her motivation and that. So, yeah, so I'm in contact with her and, you know, and a couple others. Yeah, for the most part, no face-to-faces. I'll get, you know, a lot of times when I first reach out to somebody, they'll be kind of friendly. But when I, you know, say, hey, if I conclude the story that you cheated, and, you know, yeah, I'm going to do an article, then they pretty much, you know, shut down.
It would be an interesting confrontation, I guess, between you and someone actually in person. I'd love to see that down the road, if it ever would be possible. So we've talked about how you're right, but you've issued a couple corrections here and there. Have you ever, I guess this is a question from Twitter, have you ever accused someone of cheating only to, you know, later on realize that there was evidence that maybe you have missed that they did not cheat?
No. And I think I'm not sure of any real corrections I've issued to, as far as, you know, a conclusion that, hey, this, you know, person cheated. It's kind of where it gets, you know, where I've kind of used up a little bit is kind of trying to guess motivation. Like, hey, this, you know, this mm-hmm. person, you know, cheated. You could just see someone got fired, you know, cross the line, and maybe they didn't. You know, they turned around early and they didn't intend to have a finishing time and it registered. So, you know, so I'm real careful, you know, there. In those cases, I don't write about, you know, anything like that anymore. Now it has to be pretty much, you know, someone cut the course, they have a picture, you know, biting on their marathon finisher medal. They posted about it on social media that they did it. They said they're going to run Boston. So it needs to be pretty obvious that it just wasn't kind of like a mistake, one-time thing, you know, something innocent. I mean, I'll report the time to, you know, get it corrected, but I'm not going to write about that case. About the only instance close to that, I did actually write about this, was when I wrote to a race to review a time that had pretty much impossible splits. And as it turns out, there was an issue with the timing at the race, and the race was aware of it, and they just kind of filled in the gaps where she was missing splits, but they didn't do it correctly, so the splits that showed were impossible. So the race director wasn't aware of it, the race director, and they almost disqualified their own vendor from, you know, and she would have removed Boston entry, but yeah, you know, but then eventually, you know, they admitted that there was an issue with the timing, and the timer, you know, did a bad job in correcting the results. So, you know, that was one case where I just said, hey, can you guys take a look at this? And they kind of went to the extreme, and I'm, you know, accused her of cheating, where I was just kind of, yeah, but, you know, so I was correcting that the time was wrong and the splits were wrong, but, you know, but she did not cheat. So that's probably about as close as, you know, I did. And I would have felt awful if somebody would have got removed from Boston based on me reporting them, you know, incorrectly. So I'm really cognizant of those cases. There was Cleveland Marathon, they had an issue with timing match where just a lot of runners had the same pattern of they'd have a real fast split of about three minutes per mile, and then the slow splits of like 14 minutes per mile following. And so it was just an issue with the timing match, and that was obvious when I saw that there are multiple instances of that. But I've got tons of people reported these runners to me, you know, where it was just the timing issue. So I'm more cognizant of the possibility of, you know, timing match issues, and I'd rather have somebody slip through that did cheat than, you know, than reporting somebody and having somebody, you know, banned that did not cheat.
Another question from Twitter goes back a little bit to what we were talking about when you reach out to someone suspected of cheating. How many people admit it immediately after your outreach? And then I guess how many have continued to deny it? I'm hoping you don't have like a Lance Armstrong type of person who just continues to deny everything that you find.
I do have those people. There's one that's just amazing. I've written, she was the one that I've written about my old times for Disney, where she had zero splits, but she has a Disney finishing time. And all the races where she runs, where she hits all the mats, she has about 6 or 7 hour times. So it's a big variance between that and Boston qualifying. Mm-hmm. And she actually ran Boston with the time she earned at Miami, where she was later disqualified from Miami after the fact. It's blatantly obvious that this woman is cheating, but she just flat out denies and sends me emails after emails with just the most outlandish, you know, reasoning. And, you know, thankfully she didn't use that Disney time. She did not use that to enter Boston this year, so I didn't have to. So, you know, willing to let it go unless I see, you know, at this point, unless I see more, you know, unless, again, another Boston qualifying time pops up when she's missing half the splits. So there's definitely some of those. As far as the people that have admitted to cheating, it's a small, I can, you know, count them on one hand. Usually they'll just kind of, you know, be quiet. And sometimes, like, I had one that I saw that entered, can't remember which marathon she used to qualify, but, you know, she admitted it, but then said, you know, it was, you know, she didn't mean to cheat. It was an accident, but she used that time to qualify for Boston. And she said she was going to raise money. Well, she didn't end up using a charity. She ended up using that time. So, you know, yeah, maybe, she, you know, spur of the moment, she made a bad decision and was tired and, you know, cut the course, but then using the time to enter Boston is where it kind of goes, where it can't be an accident. So, but again, she did it, you know, she did admit it. So, yeah, so really, I could think of maybe half a dozen that, you know, people actually admitted it. Usually they just kind of, you know, they'll shut down or they'll keep on denying, like the running coach that I wrote about, Harlan, who, you know, denied it, sent me back to GPS data and whatnot. And he was eventually, about a year after I wrote the first article, he was eventually disqualified from the, you know, from the race in question as well.
So when you do all this, is a question I guess that was also sent in. I mean, what's the feeling like? Because it doesn't seem like there's a race that's too big or too small for you to investigate. No one's too fast or too slow for you to crack down on. I mean, does it feel like you're catching cold hard criminals, or what's the feeling afterwards of what you're trying to do for the sport?
Typically not cold hard criminals. Now I have been ventured off into, you know, into charity fraud and that kind of thing. In a couple of cases, so that's a little bit different. But no, typically it's not that. But again, it's really people acting very selfishly. And again, it's, you know, taking away awards or, you know, Boston qualifying times from the people that deserved them. Even with you know, with Jane, who, again, I still feel bad with quite how far that went. She, you know, she stood on the podium after, you know, and accepted the award, you know, even after telling me she didn't, you know, that he left the course right after she ran the race, you know, she did, you know, stand up and accept the award that belonged to somebody else. So, so again, it's trying to get a little bit of, I mean, justice even seems strong, but just trying, you know, again, getting people the recognition who deserve it. And again, I think kind of serving as a deterrent from people, you know, people might think twice now before they even cheated a small race, knowing that, you know, there's a good likelihood that, you know, someone's going to report them to me, or I'll catch them in my normal course of going through results.
Back to, I guess, like mentioning how, you know, how big or small races are. Are there any, I'm guessing there's also cases where it's a really small race, you notice something and maybe you just report it to the race director and it doesn't even make the blog post. Are there those types of cases as well?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, yeah, I've been, you know, busier with my, you know, with my real work over the last month. I've been articles. I'm still, you know, results reporting the results that, you know, that I noticed. I still, you know, I report way more than what I write about. That's always been the case.
A lot of people want to know, what do you do in your free time?
mostly with the kids. I mean, I'm sort of like going to soccer games and, you know, cheerleading for my daughter and taekwondo for my son and, you know, taking them to the amusement park. I live like 5 minutes away from Kings Island, so I take there. So, yeah, no, it's pretty much, you know, my free time is pretty much spent with my kids and my wife, of course, not my family.
Absolutely. That's the way to do it. And then another question that was sent in on Twitter. Have you noticed an increase in cheating or like, have events made it too easy? It seems like now with GPS data, cameras, it's only gotten harder.
Yeah, I think it's gotten harder cheating. I think just because it's getting more attention and, you know, I've written more about it and people kind of more on the lookout for it. People kind of get the impression that cheating is on the rise. I don't think that's the case. Actually, I think, you know, less are getting away with it now. You know, going through the Boston results from 2017, I found, you know, less obvious people who actually got in the race. Now, stopped a whole bunch that tried to register from actually getting in, but as far as, you know, snuck through them, I found a whole lot less, you know, course cutters in particular that were able to, you know, get into Boston. So they're taking a, you know, better look at it and stuff. So, yeah, no, so I think it's probably steady. I mean, hopefully it's, you know, declining a little bit, even just as a result of, you know, people being aware. I mean, I hear stuff from runners on pretty much every race, you know, when they see something suspicious. And a lot of times it's nothing. You know, half the times it's probably, you know, it's probably nothing, you know, nothing at all. And some, you know, other times it is.
As far as, aside from people reaching out to you, what are some other ways people can I guess, report cheating? Is it just an email to a race director? How often do this, I mean, you think those get opened up?
No, I think they do more frequently. I know the response I've gotten from race directors has been a lot better than when I first started. When I was just the nutcase with the blog. Now I'm the well-known nutcase with the blog, but they tend to respond more. Than they used to. So, but definitely, I think emailing the race director is the way to go. If they do that, you don't get a response, and you don't feel that strong about it, then they can obviously contact me. And I always write articles. Mm-hmm. And someone contacts me, and they can say, please, can you just report this? I don't want to write an article, then I typically wouldn't. So, I think contacting race is the best way to go.
So now let's get into a couple fun questions. Here's one that was sent in, that another writer for the site here drew up. It's like, how would you have handled Catherine Switzer or Rosie Ruiz back in the day?
Good one. Rosie Ruiz. I don't know how else you could have managed. She still doesn't admit it. banning her from everything and. She got as much public shaming as was possible then. It's not quite, if that would have happened today, it would have been tenfold from where it was, and it would have been known immediately. It wouldn't have taken quite so long to find her. And Catherine Switzer, that's perfectly fine. She should have been allowed to run that race, but in the beginning. So I wouldn't have done anything there.
How many emails did you get after Chicago about Matt Centrowitz running with his dad's bib, which must have just been like a little error, I guess, among Nike people setting it up.
Yeah, I got a bunch. Well, actually, I think the first was like someone brought it up on Twitter, and then people kind of retweeting and commenting. I mean, I'm like, there's no way he was intending to cheat his way to Boston qualifying time for his dad or whatever it was, people think, oh, it's probably his dad's bib when they messed up and whatever. So, I got emails, but I don't think I even responded to any of them. I wrote about this, I was getting emails that the 2 years ago at Boston that the police commissioner was banditing, and it was for Norman Patriots Day. They had the bib on. This is the police commissioner's bib from 2 years ago. And the guy, his neck, it's obviously not the same guy. I think the actor, weighed about 100 pounds more than the police commissioner. So that was kind of funny. But it took me a little bit of time to figure it out for sure. But he had multiple requests to look into that bib. It was filming for a movie. Someone on Twitter, random question, wants to know
what's your favorite donut?
My favorite donut? I'd say Boston cream. Boston cream is good.
Can't keep it with the Boston theme. What do you think has been, the craziest reaction you've gotten to a post? Was it the Jane SEO post, because I mean that one was like there were crazier cases I feel like beforehand, but that one seemed to have popped across the internet. People found that one really interesting.
I think the part that really made that crazy was hopping on the bike to try to fake the GPS mm-hmm. check, and also I was able to get a picture of her watch showing that she ran short. But there was a whole lot there. So those were, that was pretty unique. I think it took off again because she went to Harvard and wrote Huffington Post, even though I didn't write those things. So I think it got picked up a little more than I would have expected. So that one caught me a little surprised. Probably the latest one on the Disney bib thief. Mm-hmm. The one that had the video of her getting handcuffed after the finish line. So that's definitely whenever I read about Disney, there's Disney groups that are very adamant, very vocal. So that gets some attention. So I'm probably most surprised. And again, an article that I may not write the next time. Runner who and I just wrote a little blurb. About a couple things. There was a runner who took an extra medal for his girlfriend and posted about it. And I wrote about that, and that just got more attention than just about anything up to that point. besides Jane. And
I remember that one. There was some outcry. People were out with pitchforks for this guy.
So got more into, you know, my, and there was other pictures that got posted, you know, even before I wrote the article, and there was a picture in the background where it had his last name, so people were able to identify him, and, you know, and so he was getting nasty emails and stuff, and I'm like, for what, you know, looking back, yeah, that was, you know, it was the wrong thing to do, but, you know, that was one I probably just would have let that, you know, kept that one off the blog, you know, if I had that one to do again. I was surprised by the outcry on that, but I don't get the same outcry for the travel agent who, you know, was making results for runners he was selling entries to. Well, I think that's a much bigger deal.
If you could sit down with Mike Rossi and ask him one question, what would it be?
I'd probably, I'd want, like, glass between us or something. Which, there may be glass between us when we sit down. but seriously, I mean, really just why would he, you know, again, I mean, it's obviously cheated. You know, I don't know if he's, you know, ever fully admit, you know, would ever fully admit it. I thought he came close, you know, after his latest, you know, running with, you know, with the authorities. But, is, you know, why, you know, why couldn't you just admit it? I mean, it would have been, if, you know, if he would admit it early on, no one would have remembered his name, you know, a week later. So that's just fingers, really, you know, why kind of keep it going? Admit what everybody knows.
Since you hopped on that so early, are you one of these people who has followed this, you know, 1,500-page Let's Run thread, or is this at this point, has it just gotten way too crazy where you have no idea what's going on?
I failed on that. Really, I was, you know, kind of towards, again, after it was pretty well determined, I was kind of following, and that's what kind of led me to, you know, doing this, was like, okay, why we're spending, everyone's spending weeks and weeks on one guy who cut the course in Boston, you know, how many more are there? So that's really what kind of led, you know, led me down that road, was how come people are focusing so much on Mike Rossi, and, you know, when there's other ones out there. So yes, I got pretty much bailed on that thread, you know, early on. Again, I'll pop in and take a look every now and then when I see something else hit the news about him. But yeah, there's really hasn't been anything useful in those threads for quite some time.
And so what's the, right now, I guess, you, I thank you for taking time for this podcast, but I mean, what is the craziest time of year for you with, is it this fall when everyone's trying to get these last minute marathons in for Boston, or is it right after Boston when you try and see who was there that shouldn't have been?
Yeah, it starts, during the spring and fall marathons, seasons are busy, definitely, you know, once bid numbers are assigned for Boston, that's when I can really kind of, you know, start doing stuff. Okay, hey, I reported this person last year, they didn't get disqualified, now they're in Boston. So now that, you know, registrations are there, I have some of that. But yeah, once bib numbers are assigned, I can kind of start preemptively looking at, you know, runners that, you know, probably have a bib number that I don't think they could have earned. So I catch some that way. But yeah, then basically Boston, you know, it's really kind of after Boston, you know, where it gets, yeah, where it gets real crazy. But again, I get constant emails during spring and fall marathon season as well. And I do my best to try to capture runners who, you know, before they get the chance to enter Boston, because that's really when it does good at this point. If I find somebody who's registered to Boston, that should be picking out good, but it's not going to get somebody else's spot.
What do you say to someone who thinks you're a hero for everything you do?
That's extreme. You know, on the other end, you know, that's a little extreme. But I mean, at that point, you know, my hobby, which again is kind of, you know, I'm a numbers geek. I'm a, you know, business data analyst, financial analyst. You know, during the day, so it's really just kind of an extension of, okay, like, you know, looking at spreadsheets and figuring out, you know, numbers, what they can tell me. So that's kind of how I go about it. So no, I'm just doing something I like, and you know, you know, get some people in Boston their awards that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise, then great.
This is really thinking down the road, but, I mean, how long do you think you could see yourself, you know, doing this as a hobby, maybe just for as long as you want, but then after that, like, have you even started thinking of, like, cultivating the next marathon investigator?
yeah, I'm sure I expect somebody else to, you know, kind of be, you know, maybe do the same thing, and that's fine. You know, because it kind of goes, you know, with me, I, you know, it kind of, it has peaks and valleys to where I've, you know, been doing it. I'm spending lots of time on it. And then, you know, when I get busy with other stuff, I just can't. And I kind of feel bad, you know, because people still email me in those times where I just don't have the time to devote to, you know, to doing it, you know, to the level I want to. So, no, sorry if that could happen to somebody else, you know, decides to, you know, they want to be doing the same thing. I wouldn't be, you know, or wouldn't be upset at all or territorial or anything. So, yeah, sorry. I don't know how long I'll do it, but then it's not, you know, I don't think it'll ever be a, you know, full time, adventure for me.
Last few questions I've got for you, and these are the ones we ask all our guests. The first one, if you could go on a run anywhere in the world, and I'm asking, it's fair because you are a runner. Everyone's a runner. Yes. If you could go on a run anywhere in the world with anyone from history, who would it be and where would this run take place?
I think I would say that's a good one. I'd probably run I can't say Boston. I'd say the Boston Marathon, and I would almost say with I like to run with Kip Litton because I want to know how the hell he did it.
Yeah, that's a conversation you probably have for the entire duration of that race.
Yes.
And then the last one has nothing to do with running, so I'm gonna actually be curious. So outside of running, do you play much basketball? Because here's the question: you get 25 shots from half court of a regulation size basketball court. If you make one shot, you win $25 million. If you make none, you go to jail for 25 years. Would you attempt the shots?
Oh, yeah. I can make one out of 25.
Really? You're bold.
You start feeling pressure. When you start getting to, like, 20, then I just feel the pressure. So, yeah, hopefully I make, like, the first one. I have no pressure, but, yeah, for it's 20 million, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Give that
there
shot.
You go.
Anyone wants to put that offer on the table, you know, I'm going to go.
You're bold. There's some so every time I've asked, you know, some of these professional runners or coaches, there's a handful that have said yes, and then there's a ton who just say no. Deal is not worth it.
I'm confident enough, like 25. Although I guess when the person starts mounting, it might be a little bit harder. But
Derek, thanks a lot for taking the time to do this. This is awesome. It was a lot of fun. And you know what? We might be able to catch up another time, you know, if you've got another big case that you're working on. So thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
That interview was brought to you by Morton. It's the world's most carbohydrate-rich sports drink. It's working wonders on all the top marathoners. Eliud Kipchoge, Wilson Kipsang, Kenenisa Bekele. The list goes on and on. You know, it also has a positive effect on runners like myself, just the average Joes who get out there to run their own races. So check them out today, Morton.com. That's MAURTEN.com. And let me know if it works for you. You've done the training. You got to the race in one piece. That's all important. But how you fuel during the race is also important. So I recommend Morton. Check it out. That does it for this episode of the City of Smack podcast. The New York City Marathon is rolling into town, and I'm going to try and snag, you know, a couple interviews here and there. But for our New York City listeners and sitwits out there, we will be having a live podcasting taping previewing the New York City Marathon next Friday, November 3rd, at the New York Roadrunner Center, 6 p.m. It'll be me. It'll be Kit Fox of Men's Journal, formerly of Runner's World. It'll be a good time. We might give out a couple shirts with a little bit of New York City Marathon trivia if you want to study up. It'll be a good time. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Check out the description for this episode for more information. And hopefully I get to see some of you out there. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave a 5-star review. Don't miss out. We're on Stitcher now as well, for those of you who needed that. And so, yeah, can't wait for next week. It'll be a good time. This has been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running.